Oof.
I'm oof.
What's oof, oof about your oof, situation?
It can be good. It can be bad. It can be indifferent.
Is this a good oof or a bad oof?
This is a oof. That good oof is understatement.
Okay.
It's outstanding.
Yeah.
Stupendous. All that wrapped up in a bag of chips.
Yeah.
Without a lot of air in between the top of the bag and the chips.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
No.
Sure it does. Get a bag of chips, it's all air.
All right.
No chips.
Mm-hmm.
This is all wrapped up stupendousness. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Great. Take phone off, G.
It's not my phone.
What's wrong with you, man? I'm trying to do a radio show.
It's your phone.
You're supposed
phone.
To be prepared.
It's your
phone.
You've
been doing this for 20 years, man.
Well, not quite.
You're slipping, dog.
No, it's your phone.
You're tripping.
I'm sure at some point the surface will go off because...
Oh, shit. Not this again.
Hey, dude, chill out, man. We're having a great day.
Yeah, look, there you're putting the volume down now on the surface.
It was already...
No, I don't believe it.
Boy,
see? I don't believe it.
I work with Judas.
That's not true, man. That is not true. And depending on who you root for and what you're into, this morning can really be either very depressing or really exciting. And last night, about 8:15 Eastern time, there was a whole bunch of stuff going on. I'm watching the Yankees start this comeback, and then I get a text from our producer, Mike Biscaglia, who texts us, the great Mikey B, the bling bling hotline bling.
Oh, your hotline bling.
Yeah, there hotline blinging from Mikey B. And he says, OMG.
Wow.
And I said, OMG what? And he goes, Hayward. I'm like, I'm not watching the day. I watched the intros because I wanted to see if Kyrie was going to get booed or cheered, how bad he was going to be booed.
He did.
So I watched that, mm-hmm. Right, he gets booed, but they go through it so quick, it didn't even seem
right.
Like much.
Yeah.
I wanted to see if there was going to be anything during the anthem, too, because it's the first NBA game we're going to see, and you see a lot of NBA players being very outspoken on issues. So I watched that, and when the game started, I went back to baseball. So I said, I'm not watching the damn game. And he goes, Hayward's key.
And what?
I said, his key. And then he goes, I'm sorry, leg.
No.
Autocorrect.
What? No.
I was typing fast.
Key.
I'll show it to you, man.
He lost his key? Can't get in the house?
I was like, wow. I was like, his key.
Wait, how do you get key from leg?
OMG, Gordon Hayward's key.
And
I'm sitting there trying to think. I'm like, what's going on with his keys? You know, what could possibly be the deal?
He slipped on a key, cut himself with his key.
Yeah, and then... I flip over to the game and I see Gordon Hayward, one half of his leg is in a place where it should not be.
Yeah.
And it was just, jarring. Just
yeah.
One of those just jarring injuries. And then I go back to the baseball game, watch the Yankees complete this comeback. It was just, so much so that my wife was even into it. She actually stayed downstairs as opposed to going upstairs and watching her DVR. She was glued to the television last night. It was just one of those nights in sports that I'm probably not going to forget this night for a long time just because of the intensity of that Hayward injury and, of course, what happened in that Yankees-Astros game.
Yeah, that was just horrific to watch. And I'm getting alerts on my phone, and we're on the set of Inside College Football, and we're watching the baseball game, but you get all these frantic alerts and other people in our research department. You have a whole host of televisions in there, so they're watching baseball, and they have basketball on as well, and our researchers are through our ears are telling us, our IFBs are telling us what's going on in the baseball game, and then you get the news about Hayward, and the disclaimer was if you're squeamish, you probably don't want to watch this, but unfortunate, we've seen it. I thought of Moises Alou when he was playing for Cubs.
Paul George, I thought of,
and
too.
And Paul George as well, and just a terrible, terrible break and loss for Hayward, maybe of the season and for the Boston Celtics, and so good thoughts heading your way, Mr. Hayward. That was just a terrible, terrible break, and hopefully he can recover soon. And then back to the baseball game. We're trying to do a college football show, and one eye is focused on that, the other is focused on a monitor in the back of the studio where the game's on, and to see this comeback, you're down 4-0 if you're a Yankees fan, and you're up disgruntled and trying to be upbeat doing your college football show, the thing that pays the bills, but then Judge hits the homer, and then it just starts from there. And I recall saying, we had a little break, 15-minute break they give the crew, and I go back into the bullpen where the researchers are, and I said, this is when the ghosts show up. It was the seventh inning, and I said, this is when the ghosts show up. The ghosts are going to show up now.
Well, I thought the ghost showed up around Starlin Castro's feet when he did that little stumble backwards and then couldn't.
Those are the bad ghosts. Those are the demons, man.
And I said at that point, it's over, right? And I should have known better because I've been watching this Yankee team now for a while. But you know, at that point, 4-0, you're thinking, this is just not going to be good for the Yankees. Offensively in this series, they've had one game where they've looked like they can hit, even with this Astros bullpen, which isn't great. And then you got Keuchel looming. The place was just quiet. Now, I wasn't there, but you could tell the TV these days. The place was just completely, there was nothing there. And then you get to the bottom half of that inning in the seventh inning where it started, or you get a couple of runs. And then, of course, the eighth inning is the big inning where you end up scoring 4 to make it 6-4. And Aaron Judge is as quintessential of a superstar as there is right now. And I know he goes through unbelievable slumps, but what he did yesterday was just what the superstar label is made of, where his team is down in a situation where you've got Dallas Keuchel, who is a thorn in the Yankees' side more than probably any pitcher that you can think of in the league, looming to send you home, and you're down. He not only hits a home run off the glass out there in center field, just whap, just, hey, muscles and flexing, and I'm Aaron Judge. But then, of course, he hits the double off the wall the next opportunity he gets, where he, of course, that was not a fastball. That wasn't a right sitting dead red situation. You know, he had to go out there and get that pitch and hit it off the wall. Just an amazing job by him. Him and Sanchez, a ton of criticism the last couple of days because they're supposed to carry this Yankee offense. They didn't in games 1 and 2. And then Gary Sanchez, of course, with his double into the gap. Just, I mean, I was so jealous of you and all the other Yankee fans out there yesterday because there's nothing better than that in baseball if you're rooting for that team. You're down 4-0, and then your young guys bring you back. Todd Frazier, who's like so happy and infectious, and just it makes you sick if you're not rooting for it because you want to be rooting for it. And I'm watching the Twitter videos of people in the stands, and they're going crazy, and you just crave that. What a moment for anybody who's actually a real Yankee fan like yourself.
That's why I said the ghosts. The ghosts show up. They had him at the old Yankee Stadium. They had him in 09 at the new Yankee Stadium last time they won a title. And they showed up again last night with this new version of the Yankees. And it was surreal. But you sit there and you never lose hope. And you've been watching this team all season long. You and I, we were discussing when the season started. You're paying attention to it now? Yes. I pay attention to it from the beginning to the end, in the middle. I watch it in Spanish when I'm in the DR. Say the end. That's CDN to us. And that's the channel over there, channel 32 on the cable system.
Yep.
Watch it in Spanish. You know, got my home run call all down, a little profundo. And you never give up. You never lose hope, even though you're talking about a team that hadn't hit worth a damn until the other night when they scored the 8 runs. And you have McCullers out there and dropping dimes. And I'm getting text messages from my Astros friends. Oh, the manager gave this game away, which we should discuss. You know, should he have kept McCullers in there after he gives up the home run?
Well, his bullpen stinks. I mean,
I would have kept him in there. The guy was nailed up until the home run, and it's a single, it's a one run, dinger. So yeah, I would have left him in there, but
there was a different situation with Sonny Gray because Sonny Gray a leadoff walk. He's got 2 guys on. Then the next batter, he goes 1-0-2, and Joe Girardi comes out to get him, and that to me made a lot of sense. And I know Robertson ends up giving up that double down the line, and it started the scoring at that point. And then people were saying, well, he should let Sonny Gray, and there was a total second guess in my opinion, he'll let Sonny Gray get out of that. No, I mean, when you've got what Joe Girardi has in the bullpen, you go to the bullpen there. With A.J. Hinch, it's a different story because you got a lead at that point, and you got a big lead as opposed to a tie game, and you also have a bullpen that has not been, I mean, it could be the worst left in the playoffs, right? So it is, I would say. So if you think about all those factors in and the way that McCullers was dealing and the fact that this guy's had no stress on his body in recent memory, right? Because he hasn't really pitched. So it's not like he's been out there just emptying the chamber of his arm every single outing. I mean, he should have as much stamina as humanly possible in that situation. I do certainly think that Hinch deserves a ton of criticism for the way he handled that. But, you know, it's really the Yankees' offense. I mean, in that situation with all these young guys, to not be intimidated by the situation like that, I mean, that's the most impressive thing.
Yeah, they've been dormant for the most part, and especially Sanchez. You can say Judge, he did break out the other night when he scored 8 runs. And then Sanchez, the only one that hadn't been invited to the party, and he finally gets involved with Ron Urdidi on the move. He hits a double, and so he finally scores a hit. And so now everyone's involved. But how about Todd Frazier? A guy comes over for his trade and talking about being a catalyst. And he kind of reminds me of Scott Brosius, a guy you're not going to really notice, but a guy who was so huge in your clubhouse, in your dugout, and comes up in big moments. He started that rally there in the 8th inning, and he made the final out there in the 8th inning, a great play by Bregman. But, you know, someone who comes over is from the area, growing up in New Jersey.
Right.
They always show the picture.
Red Sox fan.
Tom Rivers, and they showed a photo of him with Derek Jeter back in the day when his little
team. Loves the Red Sox.
And a dream come true for him to play for the New York Yankees.
Not really.
And he's living that dream.
Big Red Sox.
So great,
fan.
Great job by you, Todd.
Love
Frazier.
Jim
keep doing
Rice.
What you're doing.
Love Jim Rice. Growing
you keep
up.
Going with that mess. Play some more country music from your boy.
No, it wasn't country. It was
whatever it was.
It was
play whatever. Play somebody else's song.
I'm just saying that Todd Frazier is a Red Sox fan. He just grew up a big Red Sox fan. It's not a dream come true for him because he was a Red Sox fan. So if he was on the Red Sox doing this, then it'd be a dream come true.
Yeah,
Todd Frazier.
Yeah, he got over that quickly.
No, I know. I do agree with you, though. I mean, the guy, it's just the guy that you want on your team. Now, the camera needs to get off him a little bit. I mean, it's on Todd Frazier 24/7. But, I mean, it is fun to watch his exuberance during this whole thing. And you've got a series now in the National League that really isn't a series as the Dodgers continue to roll and the Cubs are up against it down 3-0. They go back to Wrigley Field. They get a Schwarber home run in the first. The place is going crazy. Here come the Cubs. We're not dead. All that. And they end up losing 6-1 in the game as Yu Darvish is just masterful from there on out. Even at the plate. I mean, did you see that walk that he took late in the game where he's sitting up there, he's faking a bunt every single time, and he walks with the bases loaded? It's unbelievable that this guy was able to make that work. It's like one of those, it's like those situations in football where you go up to the line, you know, when it's a 4th and 4, and you're at your own 35-yard line, and you go up there just to try to draw the team off sides, and you're like, this never works. And then a guy jumps across the line. You're like, oh, my God, how stupid is that? Well, that's what that situation was for Yu Darvish last night. And the Cubs, if there's a team that you think could storm back and do it, I mean, the Cubs would be one of those teams. But the Dodgers are too good. I mean, they're too damn good.
They're hit their stride again.
Yeah.
They had that little lull there near the end of the season. Now they've hit their stride again. Yu Darvish, another big acquisition prior to the trade deadline. And now he's pitching like the Yu Darvish that came over to the Rangers from the beginning. And you know, I mean, you get all these guys, Kershaw and Darvish and everyone else pitching it as well as they are. And the bats have awakened. It's going to be difficult beating these guys. They have the mojo now like the Cubs had a season ago.
I tell you, and I still a long way to go with the Yankees because you got to beat
Keuchel
and you got to beat Verlander. I mean, it's one of the two you're going to have to beat. So in order to win this series, you got those guys back-to-back. You got Keuchel once again today, 5 p.m. Eastern time. Then you
exactly
go back.
Exactly who they want.
Yeah.
Exactly who they want.
I don't know.
He has owned the Yankees.
Yeah.
He has owned them.
Do you want him, though, really?
Yes.
And you go back to Houston 3-2 with Verlander on
you
the mound.
You want him, too.
Friday night, game 6, you've
bring it.
You're in that. You're in the situation you want to be in. If you're the Astros, there's still a long way to go. But if baseball gets Yankees, Dodgers after the year, they get the Cubs winning the World Series last year. Boy, I mean, Rob Manfred, you know, when's the party? Because that's about as good as a follow. Because I thought that they'd go back and it would be such a letdown after last year because that was just spectacular. You got the Indians who haven't won since God knows when, the 40s. You got the Cubs, we know their whole story. I have those two teams going at 3-1 lead and the game 7 the way it went. There's no way it could get any better. You get Yankees, Dodgers, it won't be better than that because the Cubs story was the best story in baseball. But It's pretty damn close. I mean, that's about as close as you can
get. I agree.
It's something that I never thought was even a possibility because I didn't think the Yankees were ready for this. But they're clearly ready. And quite honestly, I mean, their roster construction, that team is more built to win a championship than the Astros are. Because the Astros have two starters, and that's it, and their bullpen stinks. So the Astros are either going to win a game.
Listen, it doesn't stink.
Yes, it does.
It does not stink. They won 2 games, 2-1. They're going to say they stink.
Their bullpen is not good.
The best record in the American leagues. It's better than the rest of them in the American leagues. Maybe not the Yankees.
It's the worst left in the playoffs. So if you want to.
Well, go there then. But don't say they stink. Hell, they got home field advantage, man.
Well, their bullpen stinks. I mean, the home field. I'm not saying the Astros stink. I say their bullpen stinks.
They're not the bullpen. They couldn't touch Giles the other night. Okay. The Yankees could.
Well,
you remember that game one?
Whose bullpen would you take?
I would definitely take the Yankees. Okay. But
would you take the Dodgers or take the Cubs
the other night?
Okay, that's one time. I'm saying is what's comparatively speaking, their bullpen's not any good. It's not good enough to win a championship. It's not. And that's if you look at the teams that have had success in the postseason recently, you have to have an incredible bullpen. You have to. There's no end, and this team is not going to be able to accomplish it with that bullpen. Even if they go to the World Series, they won't win it because of the bullpen. And I'll stand by that right now. Bullpen stinks. You know what they need, that bullpen? A little bit of relief
factor.
Hey,
Astros, don't listen to that. You don't know what he's talking about. You're right. You do need some relief factor. You may or may not be an athlete, but I still know that pain for anybody is a real bummer. Regardless of your vocation or age, know this. Relief Factor is not just for athletes or retired athletes like me. You know who it is. Brian Jones here. And for the first time ever, I'm endorsing a pain reliever that is 100% drug-free, and that's important. And no, just because I'm a retired football player with aches and pains that, quite frankly, I deserve because of what I put my body through, doesn't mean you can't lower or even eliminate your pain as well. Back pain, neck pain, shoulder, hip, knee, or foot pain can keep you from walking, sleeping through the night, golfing, playing tennis, or simply playing with your kids or grandkids. The good news is Relief Factor makes available a 3-week quick start for only $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. I'm pleased to announce that for all of October, the owners of Relief Factor are donating $5 of each $19.95 3-week quick start to children in need. Go to ReliefFactor.com to order now. That's ReliefFactor.com.
Geo and Jones on CBS Sports Radio.
Andrew Bogish is here. He's got an update for us. What's happening, Bogish?
Well, that's where we start. Obviously, there is no good time for a catastrophic injury, but Gordon Hayward was just 5.5 minutes into the first game of a 4-year, $128 million contract with the Celtics. Hayward's left leg got caught underneath him as he came down from an attempted alley-oop. He broke his left tibia, dislocated his ankle. LeBron spoke to Hayward before he was stretchered off the court in Cleveland.
Those are the injuries that you never see coming. You never want to happen, no matter who it is, no matter what the stature, no matter how much competitive nature that you have. It's just very unfortunate.
James and the Cavs eventually won the game 102-99 with LeBron scoring 13 of his 29 in the fourth. Hayward flew back to Boston with the team, is now at the hospital for surgery this morning.
I heard that they were able to reset it temporarily on the court, I think is what the broadcast said, which was an important detail because being able to do that then was able to at least help him out pain-wise and then also
blood flow back to the injured area.
Yeah, right. So basically his foot doesn't fall off.
And the concern always is arteries and veins and ligaments, so that's why he's able to go home too and have surgery today, that it wasn't any kind of like actual emergency situation.
It's one of the worst I've seen. What was that Louisville player? We're going to have to
Kevin Ware.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That one where the bone went through his leg. Yeah. That was bad. I mean,
Robin Ventura sliding in a home plate.
Yeah.
And the same thing, his foot was twisted the wrong way. Jason Kendall in the first base.
Yeah. I was just thinking more basketball because it's rare. I feel like it's rarer in basketball to see something like that. And then Paul George one was.
And that's from running into the basket.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just the way I felt like you could hear it.
You definitely could hear it.
I mean, because that was a sound that was not just a normal guy hitting the floor sound. Like, I heard there was something that you could hear the break. It was just awful. I mean, you think about, you don't want to think about money right away, but there is some sort of injury exemption, and Mikey B sent it in our email chain where they'd be able to save a little bit of money in the cap and then bring somebody else on the roster if he is lost for the season. But the guy played 6 minutes in a year where he's going to get paid $29 million. It's like amazing how the world works sometimes.
The Rockets closed that opening night in the NBA by rallying for a 122-120 win at the Warriors. Kevin Durant did score at the buzzer, but replay showed it was just a bit late. 27 points in the win for James Harden. Chris Paul watched the final four-plus minutes with that nagging left knee injury. The Dodgers are almost back in the World Series.
On 3-1, Taylor with a fly ball to center field. Well hit. Jay going back to the wall. He looks up, and it's gone. A home run. Chris Taylor has shot over the wall in center, and the Dodgers take a 2-1 lead.
Charlie Steiner, Dodgers radio. Chris Taylor putting LA ahead for good in the third. He added an RBI triple as LA won at Wrigley 6-1 for a 3-0 lead in the NLCS. The Dodgers haven't won the pennant since 88. They can change that. 9 Eastern, first pitch tonight in Chicago. Meanwhile, another 5-0-8 start for the Yankees and Astros in the Bronx. As Brian pointed out yesterday, the Bombers don't need to win 4 straight for their second straight rally from an 0-2 hole, but they're going to.
Here's the 2-2.
Swung on and driven to deep left. It is high. It is far. It is off the wall, or it came out. Judge holds it second. It was off the wall, a double. The tying run scores. The Yankees have come all the way back.
Gary Sanchez followed with a two-run double for a 6-4 stunner.
Please tell me they kicked that fan out of the game that reached over the wall.
Houston led 4-0 entering the bottom of the seventh. Now they've lost back-to-back games for the first time in almost 6 weeks. Dallas Keuchel and Masahiro Tanaka on the mound today like they were back in game one. Ezekiel Elliott maybe will play the Cowboys' next 2 games thanks to a temporary restraining order from a federal judge in New York. He gave the NFL 2 weeks to argue before the presiding judge in the case why it should be allowed to implement the 6-game suspension. That presiding judge is currently on vacation. And on ice last night, Columbus won its 4th straight, 5-2 in Winnipeg. Tampa Bay's 4-game run ending in a shootout in Jersey, 5-4. Boys?
All right, Pogues, thanks. There was no doubt that that injury last night had a massive impact on everybody that was involved. And this is one of those moments, you know, we talk about sports moments and everybody together, and it, sometimes those are cliche things. Last night, there was no doubt that, I mean, it didn't matter what uniform you were wearing, didn't matter who you were rooting for, didn't matter if you hate the Celtics, love the Celtics. I mean, seeing that was so unbelievably impactful. And it's not just, you know, Gordon Hayward and what it means to that team and that game, and they ended up rallying and coming back, even though they ended up losing the game last night, and good for them. But, I mean, it changes the entire complexion of the Eastern Conference. And now you think the Cavaliers had a real legitimate contender in that Eastern Conference that they would have to deal with, and the Boston Celtics with Kyrie there. Not that they can't be. I don't want to totally dismiss them, but of course, this injury, you know, changes that. Now it opens it up for another team in the East to maybe make a run at them. But it's just 6 minutes into the season. It's like this NBA whirlwind of stuff that we have gone through over the last several months. It's never ending, and this was a real negative one.
And if there is any silver lining, and there's not a lot, but the fact that it happened now, and this team has time to regroup. Now, what are the moves they make? They have to sit back and assess how serious, well, we know it's a serious injury, but assess how long it takes for him to recover from this injury, and it's probably going to be season-ending injury. Now, what are the next move that Danny Ainge and the front office make? And so that definitely gives them time to readjust and make some changes and maybe go pick someone up, or maybe these young guys will get more playing time, and now they get to step up and take advantage of that opportunity.
Back into the baseball talk as we welcome in Steve Phillips, former Major League Baseball general manager and co-host of the Leadoff Spot on MLB Network Radio, which gets underway in about a half hour's time from now. Only listen to them in the breaks, right, of our show. Steve, good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good to be with you guys.
All right. So last night, just an unbelievable comeback by the Yankees. And you have Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez, who have had their struggles at times during the series of breaking out and really carrying the way. You've seen a lot of young, impressive players. What can you say about Sanchez and Judge last night in that situation?
I mean, you think about the Yankees both now and moving forward. You know, these guys are making, you know, $500,000, right? And when you talk about the huge payrolls the Yankees have had, I mean, they have right now the number three, number four hitter for, you know, the next 10 years. Throw in Greg Bird, and they've got their five hitter. You throw in Severino, they've got an ace. And what these guys did yesterday, coming up huge in a situation. I mean, Aaron Judge is remarkable to me. I played 7 years of minor league baseball and had my fair share of strikeouts as a hitter. And every time I struck out, I felt the pain of that strikeout and the other 50 ones before it. And so, when you walk back to the dugout, that sort of weight feels so big on you. Aaron Judge never feels affected by anything. He always has a smile on his face. He never attaches one at bat to the next. And the adjustment he made going down, reaching on a ball, the double I thought was amazing too, where he went out, got a ball on the outside corner, kind of ripped it into the left field. And then Gary Sanchez, the sac fly he got in the seventh inning, staying inside the baseball, driving it to kind of right center field, was critical, because then in the eighth on a 2-0 count, he got a fastball. And with Didi Gregorius running, and it may have very well been a hit and run, but he stayed inside it, drove the ball to right field for the double to drive in the go-ahead runs. And pretty remarkable day. 2-2 in that series right now, and tough for the Astros, considering that this kind of deja vu all over again for them, going back 2015 in their series against the Kansas City Royals.
Steve, Sanchez had been struggling, didn't have a hit in the ALCS up to that point. Do you think the fact that Didi was on the move helped him go the opposite way?
I think it helped. I do. I think the sac fly was a big at bat. He hit the ball real well, lined it to right field. I think Jurecki made the play on it, and the run that scored on the Didi Gregorius triple that came before that. But I do think that a lot of times with the runner moving and a hit and run play, the idea is hit the ball hard. It's usually on the ground, but hit the ball hard. The other way, stay inside the baseball. And when teams are busting you hard inside and then throwing the breaking ball away, it's hard to stay inside the ball because you're cheating on that inside pitch, hoping to get there. And then when they throw it away, you tend to be pulling off the ball. It looked to me like the sac fly got them back into that approach. For most hitters, the better approach is when they're locked into the opposite left center, right center field. Hit it over the shortstop's head, hit it over the second baseman's head, play to the middle of field, and don't pull off the ball. Easier said than done, but certainly the runner moving on the play probably played into it for Sanchez as well.
Gio and Jones, it's Steve Phillips of MLB Network Radio on CBS Sports Radio. What'd you make of Hinch's decision to take McCullers out when he did?
I didn't mind it. Now, it's funny because, you watch the post game on FS1, and those guys are crushing it, right? Keith Hernandez is saying, why would you take him out right there? He's dealing. I thought that in the fifth inning, in the sixth inning, I thought that McCullers looked a little anxious on the mound. It looked to me like he was gasping for his last breaths of air to be able to kind of get through it. And then he went back out in the seventh, gave up the home run. I was okay. I know it was only 81 pitches, but when you look back at the season, he had thrown, I think, 83 pitches on September 30th or on September 24th. And prior to that, you remember, he had been out with shoulder elbow issues. He had only made 3 starts since July 30th. So he hadn't been stretched out at any point since September 30th, where I think he might have had 74 pitches. But I kind of thought he was right at that point. When you give up the home run there, I honestly didn't have a problem with taking him out. Figuring that, look, the bullpen, Davinsky's been their go-to guy for most of the season. I didn't have a big issue. MLB Network didn't mind it, and the FS1 guys crushed it. I was more toward the MLB Network guys, and I was not killing that move at all because I thought he was probably at his end.
What was your assessment of Sonny Gray? He hadn't gotten a ton of run support since he came over to the Yankees. Didn't get any last night either. Once he was out of the ball game, they started hitting. How'd you think he did? I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah, talking about no run support. I think Sonny Gray in his last 21-plus innings of postseason play has not got a single run of run support. And I was surprised that Sonny Gray was as effective as he was. I was worried about him in the start. I've not liked what I've seen since he's come over to the Yankees. He doesn't have real put-away stuff. Now, he's got a good curveball, but it's not a McCullers curveball, so that kind of stood out a little bit too. But I thought that he did as fine a job as I would have expected there. I thought that they probably waited one batter too long for the catcher's interference to get him out of there. I would have gotten him out after the walk in that inning and gone to the pen a bit earlier. I didn't love after the catcher's interference and after one ball to Altuve, you're kind of bringing in Robertson in a tough situation there. So, you know, I thought that Gray was as good as could have been expected in that situation, and his buddies picked him up in the seventh and eighth inning.
I know it feels like the Yankees are unstoppable right now after the last couple of games and seeing what happened last night, but the Astros still have Keuchel today, and then game six at home, they've got Verlander, and that's really what this series is going to come down to. Is momentum, is the age-old cliche a part of this with the momentum is only as good as your next day's starting pitcher? Do you believe that the Yankees really have seized control of this series?
Yeah, I mean, obviously in New York with the fans, where the Yankees are playing at Yankee Stadium in the postseason, are they 6-0? They've won 18 of the last 12 games at home. You know, it feels like it's in their favor, but the Astros still have home field advantage. And, oh, by the way, they have, you know, Keuchel and Verlander, both who won games 1 and 2 in this series. So, you know, the Astros have to feel pretty good about their chances still. That being said, if the Yankees can find a way to win this game tonight, I think the pressure is tremendous on the Astros at that point, even going back home, considering that it feels like a landslide starting to come against them. The Tanaka-Keuchel matchup is a good one. You know, there's some part of when you play a pitcher who just recently shut you down where there's some advantage to the hitters because you know what the pitcher is going to do. He's going to approach you exactly the same way he did the last time when he shut you down. Why wouldn't he? But to that point, the hitters for the Yankees kind of know the game plan. They know what the sequence of pitches are going to look like. They know how they're going to be approached by the opposition. And I think there's some advantage in that for the hitters. So, look, I think the advantage still is in the hands of the Astros. But I think the Yankees are going to win the series.
So what would be your approach? You know what's coming, and the guy doesn't – he's not a flamethrower, and I'm speaking about Keuchel here, not a flamethrower. What's your approach now going in?
Well, I think for Keuchel, you've got to make him get the ball up. I mean, he's that sinker ball guy. He wants to keep everything at the knees and below. I think the strike zone will be really interesting, and if I'm not mistaken, I think Jerry Neals is going to be the home plate umpire in Game 5, which, quite honestly – isn't the best thing for this game. The one thing about Jerry Beals and something to keep an eye on in the game, he's one of the shorter umpires, and where he's always seemed to have difficulty is on the pitch down and away, because with bigger catchers, he doesn't see that corner. He doesn't see over them the way that he stands behind the catcher, and he's also had a tough series so far. He's the guy that made the call at third base on Brett Gardner, where initially he called him safe, and then he was overruled, and they called him out. He was the guy yesterday at first base that called Aaron Judge out on that the double play where he had gone to second, and then he got overruled on it. Now, it turned out that Judge didn't touch second base on his way back, but Meals twice has had calls in this series on the bases that have been overruled. And you know, and so that's going to be a real interesting aspect of this game tonight is how he plays into it. But for the Yankees, you've got to make Dallas Keuchel get the ball up. You've got anything at the knees, you almost face him like he's a knuckleball pitcher. Because with, you know, the philosophy with a knuckleball pitcher is when it's high, let it fly. When it's low, let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of with Keuchel what you have to do. Because if it's starting at the knees, it will be a pitch below the knees when it gets there, whether it's his breaking ball or his fastball. And so I think they have to have a level of patience on the pitch down.
Over 200 at-bats versus Keuchel and no home runs. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and so they're going to hit 4 tonight.
Right. Oh, I hope you're right.
This has been such an unpredictable postseason. It's been one of the best postseasons I've ever seen. I mean, it is. There's so many storylines, so many great individual performances. You know, the momentum shifts and things going in a different direction. Yu Darvish squaring around and being allowed to hit in the sixth inning with the bases loaded and drawing a walk, a four-pitch walk. The first pitcher ever to get a four-pitch walk with the bases loaded in the postseason. So a lot of weird things going on.
Cubs, do the Cubs have a miracle left in them, or you think that this one's just a matter of time?
Well, if there's anybody that can do it, it'll be the Cubs. Joe Madden will have a magician come out and, you know, wave his magic wand over the bats, and they all of a sudden start to hit. But I think the Dodgers, who had lost 20 of 25, right, and had not been playing well at the end of the season, they've not lost a postseason game. They look so good right now. Alex Wood on the mound today, and the Cubs offense has just been lacking. So I think certainly I would pick the Dodgers to if they don't win it today, they'll win it in Game 5.
Do you think that a Dodgers-Yankees World Series could actually outrate what we saw last year in the World Series with the Cubs and the Indians?
Boy, I really do think it could. I mean, you're talking about two of the biggest media markets. Certainly, a big part of the factor there, the Cleveland part of that equation last year is probably the reason why, just because of the size of the market. I think the Yankees-Dodgers World Series would outrate what the Cubs did, even though it was, a historic turn of events and finally breaking a curse. I think the Dodgers baby bombers and what they would bring into the mix with this Dodgers team that, was baseball's best record all season long could certainly outrate that.
And the history element of this would just be incredible, even for young baseball fans to think about what that matchup Dodgers-Yankees would mean. It's still a ways to go. One more thing before we let you go. Isn't it comical now to think about that Joe Girardi was rumored to possibly be fired after that Friday night game against the Indians to where we sit now with the Yankees winning back-to-back games in the ALCS and seemingly in control?
Right. The fans' reaction was profound, to say the least. They booed him before Game 3 back at Yankee Stadium. He had to warn his wife and kids that to be prepared for the way he's going to get treated. I kind of looked at it all along, saying, listen, if you don't want him, I'll take him. He is an outstanding manager. He can manage young guys. He can manage old guys. He can manage the blend of teams. He can manage the rebuilding team, the championship caliber team. He handles the media well. He cares. He has passion. He respects his players, and they respect him. Look, the only reason Joe Girardi won't be managing next year is if he chooses not to. The only reason he's not managing the Yankees is if he decides he wants to spend some time with his family and just walk away. But why would you not want to manage the Yankees for the future? I mean, with all these young studs and the top three farm system, if he doesn't want it, I'll take it. I mean, that's a managing job I think everybody in baseball would want. And everybody would want Girardi to be their manager if the Yankees don't want him.
I want those 404 home runs you said they're going to hit tonight. So
right.
That's the word with the bark on it.
It may happen. You'll see. I mean, it's a peculiar postseason. It may very well happen.
Steve Phillips of the Leadoff Spot on MLB Network Radio does an outstanding job. Steve, thanks for the time this morning.
You bet. Thanks.
There he goes, Steve Phillips, former Major League General Manager. Girardi, I thought, had an outstanding idea last night. Didn't work out. But on that whole replay fiasco that was going on with Aaron Judge being safe, getting caught off, in no man's land and then going back to first base, sliding in safe when he was called out, the Jerry Meals call that Steve just referenced. So in the replay, they see both managers, Hinch and Girardi, see that Aaron Judge goes past second base,
right.
Does not retouch second base on the way back. So Girardi then tells Judge to go and try to steal second on a potentially sleeping McCullers, which didn't end up working out, because if Judge gets the second base somehow at that point, then that review about him not retouching second base is then nullified. So for him to be able to think about that in that situation, and he's sitting there going, go, 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 to Aaron Judge, I mean, that right there, I would have never crossed my mind at all. So pretty genius stuff there.
Yeah, and the Yankee fans reacted the way most fans would have reacted, because he didn't challenge the call there in the Cleveland ball game, and he understands that, and he said so in his press conference the next day after he'd hem and hawed and gave non-credible excuses, and that compounded the situation. So to sit there and say, I don't want to mess up the rhythm of a pitcher, come on, just say I should have reviewed it, and we would have moved on from that, but don't give silly explanations why you didn't review it. That made it even worse.
Yeah, it was bad. I just never thought he should have been fired or thought that should come
well,
up.
Well, I didn't call for him to be fired. I just said it's you consider that, because that's just a horrible move by him not to even think about that with your catcher, and you're a former catcher, and you're going to listen to your catcher. Your catcher's telling you he was not hit, so go out on a limb, even if you think he was hit, and review it.
He's challenging everything now.
I mean, every day. Of course
everything.
He is.
It doesn't matter what it is. I think he's got a red flag in the dugout now, too.
I think they caught a pigeon with that pitch. Let's look at it.
Let's go back. Why not? Yeah. What the hell?
You see that fly on the ball? No, can't do that. No. At it.
We're coming right back.
Give us a call right now. 855-212-4CBS.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Someone tweeted our Geo and Jones account and said, "You guys bias much?" Ah, sarcasm. And I responded back, "Well, Brian's an unabashed Yankees fan, so yeah, of course there's going to be some bias. We're not beat reporters, right?
Right.
We're not
course.
Independent observers.
And we're objective, aren't we? I would like to think I am. Yeah, I give your team credit. If they beat the Yankees or beat someone else, I give them credit.
And also, I mean, there's a lot of Yankee hating that goes on here.
A ton of it.
So, I mean, that sort of balances it out.
I'm outnumbered.
Yeah, certainly.
On this show, at least.
Yeah. Coming up in by a large margin, actually.
Yes.
Coming up in about 10 minutes from now, we're going to talk about this clandestine NFL meeting about the national anthem that a whole bunch of different reports came out of. I don't know what's going on there. But in the NBA last night, the Warriors don't like the first game of the season because last year, if I remember correctly, they got blown out by the Spurs the first game of the season. Everybody panicked.
Mm-hmm.
And then last night, they ended up losing to the new-look Houston Rockets in a close one, of course. And not having Draymond Green was an issue for them. Chris Paul dealt with a little bit of an injury. I didn't see this game, saw the highlights. Obviously, it was very, very late on the East Coast, but nothing to panic over. What I do think is interesting, though, is this Rockets team, because of all the teams that assembled during the offseason, all the cold arms that we saw in the Western Conference to try to take out the Warriors, this is the one that I thought had the most potential to bust, because one of them probably will. Now, I don't think it's going to be Oklahoma City. I don't think it's going to be Minnesota. I don't think that the Spurs and the Warriors are going to take a step back. So I had to pick one of those in there. And to me, the combination of Chris Paul and James Harden, who come up short in the biggest situation seemingly every time, that to me, especially with the year that the Rockets had last year, as good as they were, then they totally revamped everything. Not like adding Chris Paul is a bad thing, but that's the team I marked and said, that's the one I think is not going to do
it. Just because Chris Paul and his former home, the Clippers, they couldn't get over the hump, which was Golden State Warriors. Many teams can't. And the Rockets, of course, their failings a season ago, and Harden, the last look we had of him, not at the club, but acting like he was disinterested,
yeah,
going up against the Spurs. So now those two coming together,
I didn't like
that's going to compound the problem.
I didn't like it. I mean, it might be a too simplistic of a take, and I was so turned off. I was beating the Rockets drum for the entire season last year.
Yes, you were.
And to see,
you were like that dude at the Cleveland Indians game.
I really was. And
nonstop.
To see them come out in that elimination game and James Harden and me, and I didn't hear a thing about him being hurt. So
no, he was fine. They don't play defense. He didn't play defense.
Oh, gosh.
And I said it, not Kevin McHale, James Harden. So call me names like you did McHale.
I just think James Harden makes so much money he doesn't care. I really do think
he cared about what McHale said.
Yeah, but that's because no one likes to be insulted. All right.
Well, he doesn't play defense. That's not an insult. That's the truth.
Coming up next, the NFL and the anthem. Yeah. CBS Sports Radio.